Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, Catherine Whittaker and myself, David Law, are in separate climes. I am coming to you from my windowless office at 12:30 in Solihull. Catherine is in Montreal in a rather more picturesque setting than mine. And I've just heard her, actually. She's in her hotel room. She's just ordered something called Arctic Char for her room service. What is that, Catherine, before we get on to tennis?
I genuinely don't know. It's in the fish section. I figured it's local, given that I haven't heard of it.
Right.
And going local is generally the thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll see what comes. You should find out live on the podcast what Arctic Char is.
I cannot wait.
And hold on to your hats, folks.
Almost as exciting as the Washington final that we have just witnessed between Nick Kyrgios and Daniil Medvedev. So much to talk about today because we've had the Washington final. There's currently one going on at the moment as we come to you. I've got on my TV in the office here. Zheng Saisai against Aryna Sabalenka, who's making a bit of a comeback form-wise in the final in San Jose. We had the Los Cabos final?
Los Cabos, right. Yeah.
Kitzbühel final. So much stuff has happened. And Catherine's there for Amazon Prime Video for covering Montreal. So what a week ahead. What a week that has just gone. But, I mean, every week, Catherine, every year, we'll have some sort of Nick Kyrgios-related conversation where we pledge never to get carried away again. And then something like this week happens with Kyrgios. He's won Washington. He's beaten Daniil Medvedev in the final in straight sets. And he's just given a speech afterwards in which he's described it as one of the best weeks of his entire life, one of his favourite weeks of his entire life. He's been in an incredible mood all week. He said he feels like he's made major strides. I mean, I don't even know where to start with the tennis and the stuff that's gone on the court, but let's just treat it in isolation. It was a fantastically uplifting experience from my point of view, just to watch it, just to enjoy it. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, in the WhatsApp chat that you, me, and my brother have, can I give away the name of the WhatsApp chat?
Go on, then.
It's called Kyrgioptimists. I mean, it's been called a few things over the weeks and months that it's existed. I think, in fact, the name of the group changed about 12 times during the course of a single Nick Kyrgios match. A few weeks back, but it is currently and has been for a while, at least since Wimbledon, called Kyrgioptimists. In that chat, I described the whole week in Washington as electrifying, and that is largely down to Nick Kyrgios. Stefanos Tsitsipas played a part, Daniil Medvedev played a part today, the Murray brothers in the doubles played a part, but it was Nick Kyrgios that provided an absolutely spine-tingling week of tennis. It was just brilliant. It was just everything you could want. And I loved his celebration today. I mean, I loved everything about today, and even more so last night, the match against Tsitsipas, which we will come on to in great detail.
Well, what was his celebration, Catherine, just to, for anybody who hasn't seen it?
He collapsed on the floor. He collapsed on the floor. He did many gestures. Well, and then he ran over to the woman in the front row of the stand behind him, who had advised him where to serve on match point, which is Kyrgios's apparent new signature move, which again in Kyrgioptimists is very much approved of. So he ran over and gave that lady a hug to thank her for her contribution to his victory. He showed he cared. David, didn't he? Showed that he cared. And
what's more, Catherine, he admitted he cared as well.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, quite a big moment in itself. Just to accept, yeah, actually, you know what? This does mean something to me. I mean, as regards, let's just take that signature move, as you quite rightly call it, in
well,
itself.
Well, you called it.
Well, he did it three times over the course of the week. And I found it hilarious against Stefanos Tsitsipas, because it starts to remind me of Tiger Woods putting his red shirt on for the final round of majors, to go even more extreme and probably more appropriate than comparing him to Tiger Woods is to compare him to my old favorite WWF wrestlers back in the 80s and 90s, who would have their, as the American commentators would call it, their patented maneuver. I'm thinking of
you are permanently, David, on the lookout for opportunities to bring wrestling into conversation.
I'm thinking of people like Jake the Snake Roberts, who had the DDT.
And I don't know any of these references.
Well, don't worry, I've got it all on video.
Apparently there's something called an elbow. What did Math call that? Hang on, I'm scrolling back through the chat.
It was a good attempt by Math to
the people's elbow.
Yeah, it was a nice try.
Suddenly I was involved in a chat about WWF. I don't know what they call it.
That's right. Don't worry,
I've got
all these on VHS videos from the 80s and 90s. I don't have anything
to
play
them on. Do you have a VHS player?
No. But you can buy them, apparently, next to the gramophones. Anyway, he's developed this thing where it's match point. He goes up to the first person he sees on the front row, or somebody he might have had a bit of chat with, and he says, "Where shall I serve?" On match point. I mean, I can't even believe I'm saying that. And it's now become his thing. I just really hope he carries it on, because I think it's one of the funniest developments in tennis I've seen in years. And I mean,
but he's so it's so disarming, isn't it? All of these things, which I don't think this is on a conscious level. I don't think this is calculated at all. But all of these things, which are sort of a quirky little sideshow, a quirky little signature move or whatever from Nick Kyrgios, they're also just the most absolutely genius tactics, aren't they? One, I mean, to take that one in isolation, it keeps him loose, doesn't it? He does it in the tensest moments. He does it when he could be standing there on the service line thinking about how big the point is coming up, thinking about how important that first serve is, going up and speaking to the blonde lady on the front row and asking her where he should serve and getting the crowd reaction to that. It's all distraction. It's also, I should just read out the Kyrgioptimist chat, shouldn't I? Which is sort of what I'm doing. But it's also a great mind game for the opponent. I mean, where you serve on the big points, you know, your patterns of play, that's a huge part of tennis. We know that sort of data analytics and so on are becoming a bigger part of tennis. I mean, all the top guys employ someone to do data analytics for them. I don't think many really professional tennis players go into big matches without having had some kind of, you know, analytics going on of their opponent's patterns of play, particularly on serve. So to completely take that out of your opponent's hands, to sort of layer on the second guessing about where they might be about to serve is, I mean, it's genius. It is inadvertently genius.
It is also saying to your opponent, right, the match is about to end. because, I mean, so far he's 3-0. He hasn't lost any of those match points. I don't know what happens if you lose one of them and then have to have another match point. Do you go and ask somebody else where to serve? I mean, that hasn't happened yet. So we don't know the full genesis and development and evolution of this tactic.
We could reach a stage where tournaments start doubling the price of front row tickets for Kyrgios's matches.
Yeah.
Because you know you might, because of audience participation.
It's extraordinary. Do you think though? I mean, let's just have a very slight serious slant to this, because should he be doing this? I mean, should he be allowed to do this? There is an argument to say that, hold on, you're not allowed to ask people's opinion
but
in the crowd.
It's a really boring argument. I can't be bothered with it. I just it's fine, isn't it? It's I mean, we should all have bigger fish to fry.
With him and Tsitsipas yesterday, you got Tsitsipas having an ongoing conversation with his dad and all the shoe malarkey, which we'll come on to. You've got Kyrgios.
If Stefanos Tsitsipas is able to enlist two separate people in the crowd, brackets, his dad and Leander Paes, of which more to come, to help fix his shoes, then I think Nick Kyrgios can ask someone whether he thinks they should serve.
My point is that we had a US Open controversy that went on for a matter of weeks over a little sign that Patrick Mouratoglou gave to Serena Williams, and yet we're getting full-on conversations. I'm just putting it out there.
Yeah, I know.
There's loads of double standards
here, David. You're delving into the Kyrgios double standards, which absolutely exist, and I am a victim of them, and you are too.
I mean, check out his language yesterday. It was unbelievable that he didn't get warned for some of the words that he was using. Now, I mean, I'm not a massive prude about bad language. I use it a bit myself occasionally. But I have to say, I and there's a lot of people that would say, look, if you're going to go and watch Nick Kyrgios, you know what you're going to get. It's up to you if you bring your kids, etc., which I also take on board. A lot of people don't know that much about tennis, and they might not know anything about how he's going to behave until they get there. They just go and see the tennis. You could say, well, shouldn't maybe tennis matches, a bit like movies, have a certification?
What? A Kyrgios certification like for matches. I mean, it's just consistency. It's consistency of application of the rules, isn't it? I'm not remotely offended by swearing. I don't care at all. I accept that people are. I don't feel strongly that there shouldn't be a rule about swearing. Whatever rule there is, please apply it consistently.
Okay.
That is all that I ask. I would apply that to every rule in tennis. That's what infuriates people, isn't it?
Yes.
Again, with the on-court coaching rule, that's what infuriated Serena Williams. Oh, I think my Arctic Char is here.
Oh, but I tell you what, folks, we'll be back in a second. More of the Arctic Char in just a moment.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com. A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
It was just someone bringing me a chocolate for my pillow.
So we've had the big build-up, folks, and we thought the Arctic Char was here.
They've brought me my dessert.
Waiting on tenterhooks. I can't wait to find out what it is.
I mean, maybe Arctic Char is a sort of coin-sized chocolate, but I
doesn't
don't
sound particularly
think so.
Nourishing. Anyway, okay, all right. Well, let's talk about the other stuff that went on with Kyrgios this week. We mentioned this match against Tsitsipas yesterday. I sort of vaguely saw some of his matches earlier in the week, Kyrgios, and the first thing I noticed when I first saw him play was just what a great mood he was in, and it was reminiscent of what we saw in Acapulco earlier this year, which he also won, which he beat Nadal and he beat Zverev, and he was incredible that week. And you just see this upbeat kind of veneer to his personality, which I love to see that. And then you add on what you had yesterday, a guy like Tsitsipas, who he's suddenly become best buds with, and he started playing doubles with him, and he's been really warm and cozy with him. And yet he went out there and he clearly wanted to show off, and he wanted to prove himself to Tsitsipas, and he wanted to prove to everybody just how good he is, because he clearly rates Tsitsipas. And he went 6-4, 2-love up. And I don't even think Tsitsipas was playing badly. It was just mind-bending what Kyrgios was able to do out there in terms of he was blitzing his forehand. He was striking his backhand pretty much to perfection. He was throwing in the variety. I just find myself lost for words what he's able to do on a tennis court when he's on song.
It was utterly mesmerising, wasn't it? I mean, I still, throughout, I thought, and I should caveat this with the fact that I landed in Montreal mid-match. I landed and immediately looked up, because it was midway through the second set, and I immediately looked up at Matt's live tweeting of events on the Tennis Podcast Twitter account. And I couldn't, when you see it all written down and you read it all in the space of about a minute and a half, it looks, I mean, it was ridiculous, I suppose, but it's that sort of condensed form of ridiculousness was, I mean, couldn't believe what I was saying. I had to check with Matt that he hadn't been hijacked or something. and then there was a point at which Matt was editing Leander Paes's Wikipedia account. It was the twilight zone of tennis. It was just magical. The whole thing, absolutely magical.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, and the tennis matched it. The tennis matched it. That's the best thing about it, that it wasn't just fun and games and magic tricks and circus-like antics, all of which, or most of which, I'm very much up for. But it was really smart, solid, spellbinding tennis as well.
Yeah. We should say, though, we saw the other side to Kyrgios as well during the match. I would say the 2 hours and 7 minutes of that match pretty much showed you his entire career right there. And at 6-4, 2-love, like I say, couldn't have been playing better at all. And there was a moment where he celebrated with the crowd by walking along the perimeter of the court and fist bumping about 15 people, having won the first set. It was just, I mean, he just draws you in. And everybody's loving it. Suddenly, at 2-love up in the second set, somebody calls out between his serves, and it really wound him up. And he said, "Will you just shut up?" And then it happened again. And he just goes to the umpire and he goes, "No, this should not be happening. What are these people doing?" And it just kept snowballing and snowballing. And this was all in the space of a couple of minutes. And then he turns to his trainer and he says, "Look, if these people are going to behave like this, why should I try and he's going on this total monologue of questioning why he should bother for these people who don't, and there was all sorts of swearing going on. And I think he lost about six of the next eight games as he just completely capitulated in this red mist, really, out of nothing. And he just handed Tsitsipas a chance.
It doesn't take a psychology degree, does it? I mean, he's actually told us there what's going on. He's told us suddenly he's in a position where he's got it all to lose. And, you know, he's afraid of losing it. So he starts not trying or starts looking for reasons to not try.
But I don't even think it was that. Something just wound him up for one second.
Yeah, but why did he find he can find something to wind him up at any moment. Anything can set him off. It's whether or not he's in the mindset to find that thing or to want to find that thing.
But then you saw this red mist start to just dissipate very gradually at the start of set three. And between one of the points, I just heard him say under his breath, "Man, you've got anger management issues." And again, he's just telling us exactly where he is and what the issues are. Then we had the issue with Tsitsipas and his shoes yet again, which basically his shoelaces he says my movement makes my shoelaces break. I mean, I don't understand how this can happen. And as Matt very succinctly put it, have you ever heard of Velcro, Stephanus? Because you need some. And so then he sends his what appear to be only one pair of shoes up to his dad. I mean, he basically gets his dad to do his shoelaces up for him. And then Dad couldn't sort it out, so he handed them behind him to Leander Paes, the Olympic bronze medalist of 1996.
Paes. Is anyone clear on why Leander Paes was there? Is he just been hired as a sort of standby cobbler for the Tsitsipas camp? I don't know why he was there.
Yes, at which point Matt decided to just add a little bit of fun, edit Leander Paes' Wikipedia to professional tennis player and cobbler.
Well, he did seem to fix them, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
But this isn't a one-off problem for Tsitsipas. It happened the previous day against Benoit Paire. I mean, he seems to be having ongoing shoelace issues, which...
Yes.
I mean... feels like one of life's easier problems to solve to
yes.
me. Do you know what I mean?
There's
enough to contend with in the realms of difficult to solve problems.
The match just got better and better. It went into a final set tiebreak. Then Kyrgios, I think, was leading 5-2 in the tiebreak, managed to go 6-5 behind and then win it. So, it was just... so much entertainment. I find it hard to really do it justice in describing it. I've even missed out one of the best shots I think I've ever seen, which is the overarm service deliberate drop shot. Not an underarm serve. He hit one of those as well, but it was the one when he hit a conventional looking serve, but just took all the pace off it to the point where it was like the slower ball in cricket, and he hit it about 55 miles an hour and it just went over the net and effectively drop-shotted his opponent.
Yeah, I was watching that feeling depressed at the fact that my what for me would be sort of a top speed serve was considered a drop shot in the realms of professional tennis. Yeah, that was... yeah. But it was spectacular, and it's both a brilliant tactic and also a disruption device and also a keeping Kyrgios loose, working the Kyrgios psychology device. And
I'd never seen that one before. I mean, I think we've seen Mansell Bahrami hit a similar one in the past, but that's, you know, with a bit of fancy racket work and hitting the racket face under the back of the racket face underneath the ball. This was carving across it like in a slice serve, but just effectively drop shotting at the same time. I don't know how you can do it. And
he got a was it that elicited the Tsitsipas eye roll?
No, it wasn't. That was when he was doing more arguing, Kyrgios, or talking to the crowd.
I really loved the Tsitsipas eye roll, which obviously got gift up straight away. It was so good.
But the really nice thing is that although we saw that eye roll, there was also a lovely moment where Kyrgios brought Tsitsipas's shoes back from his dad and presented them to Tsitsipas on the court. I mean, it is wonderful to watch this stuff. And then you also see plenty of stuff that maybe I don't like to see as well. Because I found the second set when he capitulated, I found it quite just depressing again. I as much as I love the show and on the what he's able to do, I just want him to do it more often at bigger events, because, you know, we've seen it at Acapulco and Washington. And look, these are brilliant tournaments. ATP 500s are really good tournaments across the board. But you said the other week, or maybe at the start of this week, that this is his sweet spot, ATP 500 events. And I think you're absolutely right. And it should not be that way, because, if you go back a couple of years ago, his sweet spot was Miami and Indian Wells back-to-back tournaments at thousands, getting to the finals and the semis. And you go back 2 years before that, and he was doing it at Grand Slam quarterfinals and beating Nadal. He doesn't do those things anymore. So we need him to start doing those things.
Oh, cue discussion about whether he's going to start doing those things. There's nothing wrong with playing your best at ATP 500 level. It's really endearing, you know. It's everybody's different. Those conditions just happen to suit him perfectly. They're proper, well-run, well-attended, well-publicized events where he gets the perfect amount of attention. People are interested in him, but they're not hounding him. He gets... yeah, everything about it just suits him down to the ground. The level of attention, the level of interest, the level of crowd intimacy, the stadiums tend to be just the right size for him. It's just, yeah, it's his sweet spot. Not everywhere is going to be. I do feel like the US Open could be his sweet spot.
What is nice, he does elevate these tournaments to a different level, doesn't he? He makes them feel like the biggest deals. He makes such a fuss of those tournament organisers, and he tells Acapulco and Washington, you know, I'm going to play this event for the rest of my career. But afterwards, I did like the fact that he said, I feel like I've made major strides. And he said... and really interestingly, just looking ahead, and I draw the comparison a little bit to Dan Evans, who's, you know, not as spectacularly wayward in his life choices as Kyrgios most of the time, although he's obviously failed a drugs test, so he's had that, and he's had a few others as well. But he got himself on the straight and narrow by just developing a routine that works for him in conjunction with David Felgate. And something Kyrgios said after his previous match was, you know, I do want to see if I can make something of my talent, and I've just got myself a bit of a routine going, and I'm trying to have some good habits. And I thought, I don't think I've ever heard Nick Kyrgios say, I want to have some good habits. And what a good way of looking at it, to compartmentalize down to just good habits rather than thinking I've got to do this, that, the other.
Yeah, because as you pointed out when we were chatting earlier, he doesn't need a coach. I know that, you know, he can't have a coach because by his own admission he wouldn't listen to one, but realistically, what is a coach going to tell him about playing tennis? I know it's sort of justifying these spectacular level of arrogance we sometimes see and hear from him, but really, why should he listen to somebody telling him where to hit a tennis ball? His instincts know better than any coach where and how to hit a tennis ball. I think, as you said, his tennis IQ is second to none. I'm not sure there's much anyone would do technique wise to him. So then you're talking about mentality, aren't you? And I'm not sure there is a coach out there that can crack that nut. But if you just boil it down to the very pragmatic, i.e., you know, a routine and habits, then maybe he can sort of crack the nut himself. And I'm not talking about week in, week out nut cracking. He ain't going to do that. But as you said, starting to do what he did this week, once or twice a year at Masters level and once or twice a year at Grand Slam level, that's that's all we want. It's all we want, because how many of what we've labelled some of the best tennis matches of the year over the last few years, how many of them have involved Nick Kyrgios? You know, Kyrgios Nadal at Wimbledon, for me, that was still my favourite match, I think, in the men's side, even more so than the final. Certainly, if I had to choose one to watch back, I would choose that match over the men's final. You know, Kyrgios Federer at Miami a couple of years ago, he's just, you know, every match he played in Acapulco, so many of the best matches, the most entertaining matches involve Nick Kyrgios, and that's why we want him to do it more. And I do, look, I am so aware of the trap, and I'm not going to fall into it, but I am just going to say that him talking about strides, him talking about talking in terms of a direction of travel rather than a sort of listless, inert, just state of being, and the fatalistic sort of acceptance of that state of being. I don't know, just talking about direction, strides, that language does feel a little bit indicative of a difference to me. And also, David, the fact that he had prepared his victory speech. I suppose he would have given a speech either way, so, you know.
On his phone, got his phone out.
Yeah, but don't you just love the thought of Nick Kyrgios last night sitting in his hotel room preparing a list of who to thank in the ceremony? I love that. I love that, because I could imagine that being something that a year or two ago Nick Kyrgios would have thought not to have been cool. But it was cool. Certainly the way he did it was cool anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think he might have to pull out of Montreal or Cincinnati.
I think Kyle Edmund would be pleased if it were Montreal.
Yeah, they're due to play first round.
I spoke to him about that first round matchup earlier today, and he sort of said all the right things, but there was a slight look of terror in his eyes.
Oh dear. Yes, but I mean, he was feeling his back a bit today. Maybe that was nerves as well to some degree. Kyrgios, but it's so brutal. This is the most brutal of the lot in terms of run-ins to a slam, and a handful of players have won them all of these tournaments. I mean, look, I'm not saying that Nick Kyrgios is going to win any of them, because he's still that bloke who's ranked down in the 30s and 40s. But
David,
I think if he wants to give himself a chance of doing anything meaningful, he's going to probably have to pull out of one of them. Yes, Catherine.
My Arctic char has arrived.
Okay, right. Hold by your beds,
coming.
Folks.
Thank you. Thank you. So I have the Arctic char. Lovely. Thank you.
It's fish.
What's it look like?
Fish.
Is it all right, or?
Yeah, it looks great. Yeah.
Does it?
Yeah.
Okay, take a picture.
Yeah, I will.
We'll put it on it. We'll put it on Instagram, folks. Don't worry. Arctic char will be more than just a description and a name very soon here on the Tennis Podcast. Right, well, how long have you got before it goes cold? Or do we need to wait until afterwards?
No, I'm fine. It can wait.
Okay.
I've heard that Arctic char is best served lukewarm.
Is that right? Well, there you are, Tennis Podcast listeners. These are the lengths that Catherine Whittaker will go to in order to make sure you have your Tennis Podcast, which... has not yielded the greatest set of results for us in our predictions this week. Every week we give you our predictions in our newsletter for the week ahead. And
absolute,
if you would like to...
cluster fudge this week, David.
We were terrible, weren't we? Yes, I said the Murray brothers would lose in the final in Washington. What did you say? I can't remember.
I said Sloane Stephens would win Washington, and she lost... Right. In the first round to It was
so memorable.
It was so long ago.
Yes.
She lost to Stand By.
Matt said that Guido Pella would win Los Cabos, thinking that it was on clay, only to discover that it was on hard court. And he lost. Actually, he got to the semi-final, so good effort from Guido Pella. But we were 0-3, folks. But if you would like to be able to listen or read about our weekly predictions every single week, you can do by signing up to our newsletter. It's free. It goes out, just after we've released the podcast every week. If you want to do that, there's a link on your show notes on your phone or your iPad or whatever you're listening to this on. If you just go and scroll down, you can click and sign up for it. Anyway,
Rebecca Peterson.
Oh, right. There we are. Well done, Rebecca. Yep. Good win over Sloane Stephens.
Beat the top seed and former champion Sloane Stephens in
round
one.
Shattering Catherine's dreams.
Who would have thought it?
Who would have? It's not you. who did win Washington? Well, it was, on the women's side, it was Jessica Pegula, who's she's going to be ranked 55 in the world now, apparently. She beat Camilla Giorgi 6-2, 6-2. She's 25 years of age, is Pegula. And I mean, I've heard a name. I don't think I'd ever seen her play. I haven't heard too much about her. So what did I do, Catherine? I went and spoke to American Andrew. Andrew Bridges, who's our intern, following in the footsteps of Matt Roberts. And this is what he said about Jessica Pegula. He said, "So I started paying attention to her a few years ago when her parents bought the NFL franchise for the Buffalo Bills in his hometown. And her parents outbid Donald Trump, allowing him to pursue other opportunities," which he obviously has done. Terry
Donald
Pegula,
Trump has made it onto the tennis podcast.
Yeah, sorry about that. Wow. Terry Pegula is an oil billionaire, and his wife Kim, who was adopted off the streets of Seoul, is now considered the most powerful woman in US professional sports. Jessie, who's won this title, has opened three restaurants in Buffalo called Healthy Scratch, and has a skincare line and a clothing line with a sister that they sell locally. She does every. I asked him, "Well, what sort of player is she?" Because I've seen the highlights of this winner when she had over Camilla Giorgi, and she beat a 6-2, 6-2. You know how hard Giorgi hits the ball. Well,
yeah.
This woman was just absorbing that power and sending it back at her. You know, just using it against her. Andrew says she does everything reasonably well from the back of the court. She's an aggressive baseliner, but she doesn't have a weapon that could really take her to the next level. But her first serve is solid enough. She moves well, and she's had a tough time with injury, but now she's healthy. So, yeah, good for her. Well done. And so there's American Andrew. Thanks for that, Andrew.
That is extraordinary Jessica Pegula insight, Andrew.
Yes.
Thank you.
That's why you listen to this show.
What will we have for you on next week's David and Catherine Read Out WhatsApp Chats podcast?
That's what it's come to. So what else has happened? Los Cabos was won by Diego Schwartzman over Taylor Fritz. San Jose at the moment has Aryna Sabalenka a set down against Zheng Saisai, and Sabalenka's looking a bit forlorn. But nice to see her back in a final, isn't it? Although she's 6-3, 2 love down as I speak. She's had some good wins this week.
I'd call that a regardless of how this final pans out, she's got break back point Sabalenka. Regardless of how that pans out, I'd call this a really big week for Aryna Sabalenka, because it's been a hideous year. Hideous.
Yeah, she needed this. Kitzbühel, Dominic Thiem won. It's his first ever title on home soil in the Austrian mountainous location of Kitzbühel. And he beat Albert Ramos Vinolas, who'd actually won Stad, I think, the week before. And Thiem won that match in the final. I didn't know this. It was quite interesting looking at the quotes from Thiem, that he said, I first went to Kitzbühel when I was 6 years of age. So this has been a childhood goal of mine to win this tournament, which I think maybe is perhaps one of the reasons why he plays it every year, including next year where he's pulled out of the Olympics, which is a bit of a surprise.
Yeah. I'm baffled by that, I have to say, because I I love how much he loves playing his home tournament. I love that he loves it enough to play it, even though it's a completely random clay court 250 event when everyone else is either still mourning the grass court season or already looking ahead to the hard court season. I mean, I love that. But if it all comes from an affection for Austria and playing, well, I suppose in Austria, but all of that, then surely you can take 1 year off for that and play the Olympics and represent your country there. Maybe win a medal. He would be in with a good shout of winning a medal in next year's Olympics. Best of three. If it's a slow hard court, if it's anything like Indian Wells, then he absolutely would be. Kitchball will be there in 2021. I don't get it. It makes me wonder if there's something else going on. But he's such a straightforward guy, isn't he? There's no side to him. So maybe there's not. Maybe he's just on a different plane to me. But I don't get it. I really don't. Mm.
Bit of a shame. But anyway, well done to him for winning Kitzbühel. We mentioned the Murray doubles because Jamie Murray and Andy Murray played doubles together this week in Washington. And they had a most fantastic first round win, didn't they? Which was just really uplifting. And Andy Murray looked like, well, he looked like a proper tennis player. He looked like there was no hint of an injury at all. And they ended up losing in the next round. What was he like today? Because you got to speak to him, didn't you, in Montreal? How has he pulled up from it? And there are even suggestions that he might play singles in Cincinnati.
Yeah, which is just, if you take a step back from it and look at the year big picture, that is extraordinary, isn't it? It's extraordinary that we're even talking about that, that he's even talking about that as a possibility. Yeah, I watched him play a practice singles set with Kyle Edmund today, and then around about an hour later, he came and did some press. He lost the set, I think, 7-5. It's so incredibly difficult to tell where he's at. He was partly because he was serving badly. When it was going in, it was definitely beefier than it was over the grass court season. For sure, he's beefed up that serve. And we saw evidence of that in the doubles in Washington, didn't we? But he wasn't getting it in. He was really, really frustrated with himself. So it wasn't a practice set with very much rhythm. And Kyle Edmund wasn't playing his best either. What I will say is he looked a lot more confident in his movement. There was no tentativeness at all. I can imagine that on grass, the potential to slip maybe in would always place an element of hesitation or tentativeness in the back of your mind. There didn't seem to be that at all today on the hard courts. He looked like, you know, maybe he still needs a bit of extra sharpness, a bit more of that explosive speed, that explosive movement. But he did look confident in it. And afterwards, when I spoke to him, he was extraordinarily relaxed. I still think, although he's saying he's not yet decided, he wants to play a couple more practice singles sets or practice singles matches before making his mind up about singles in Cincinnati. I got the impression he was optimistic about that. He said if he doesn't play singles in Cincinnati, he won't play singles at the US Open because he doesn't want his first singles tournament back to be best of five sets, which absolutely makes sense. I think he's really, really excited about getting to play singles again, but he's genuinely in no hurry. And the reason he's in no hurry is because he thinks he's got time. He thinks that this could be for real. And he doesn't want it to be for one tournament or for one swing. He wants this to be a proper comeback, which could maybe get him to somewhere near the top of the sport for several more years yet. And in the context of that, a couple of weeks here and there is nothing. Look, he might be wrong. That might not be achievable, but he thinks it might be. He thinks it's worth having a shot at. And that being the case, there's no need to rush it.
Yeah. Well, the first match they played in the doubles was against Nicola Mahu and Edouard Roger Vassalan. I mean, it was just the most fantastic doubles match. Just reminded you once again of how great doubles is to watch. The second match that they played, they actually were winning that one as well, but ended up losing out to Raven Klassen and Michael Venus, 10-7, the third set tiebreak. But they're a really good doubles pair, the Murray brothers. We've seen that in the past, in the Davis Cup final, of course, and the run to that title. I think Jamie Murray's now going to go back and play with Neil Skupski over the next couple of weeks in Montreal and Cincinnati, and then at the US Open, whilst Andy is going to play with Feliciano Lopez this week in Montreal, which is pretty cool. One thing go on, Catherine.
Well, just a minor update on that. Murray said if he doesn't play singles in Cincinnati, he will play doubles with Lopez. So basically, Lopez has made himself available as his doubles partner if he wants to play doubles, which is, you know, what an option to have. What a great sort of resource in the Murray comeback Feliciano Lopez is proving to be. And he said that if he didn't play singles at the US Open, Murray said he would want to play with Lopez, but that Lopez was under a little bit of pressure from his Davis Cup captain to play with a Spaniard at the US Open. So there could be...
Okay.
Who is the Spanish Davis Cup captain?
I forget. Can't remember.
I'm Googling.
Okay. All right. You Google while I just say this. We've had a lot of notes and messages from listeners who were frustrated at the fact that they were unable to... Go on.
It's Sergi Bruguera.
Oh, okay, well done, Sergi. Welcome to the tennis podcast. We had a number of messages over the last few days from people who had been hoping to watch that Murray doubles second match against Klassen and Venus and were unable to because it just wasn't put out on the international feed anywhere. And obviously, Catherine's in Montreal for Amazon Prime Video, have the rights to the ATP circuit and we'll be producing all these matches from Montreal and Cincinnati and the US Open as well over the next coming weeks. Now, a lot of people were upset that they weren't able to watch this match. So what we did is we asked Amazon to why it was that match wasn't available to be seen. And a spokesperson got back to us and said that as an international rights holder, we were only provided coverage of the stadium court at the City Open that day. The Murray doubles match was unfortunately not made available to us as the match was placed on a different court for scheduling reasons. We apologise for the previous incorrect information on our site. We believed we would have the match available and apologise to our customers for this mistake. It does remain one of those frustrations, doesn't it, Catherine, that I think at ATP, certainly 250 and 500 level tournaments, not all doubles matches are produced. And I spoke to Simon Higson at the ATP tour today, who's their vice president of communications, who said that there are talks ongoing about what to do with the situation and how next steps to be taken. I think there is a desire to certainly improve the number of matches that are produced and put out, because companies like rights holders like Amazon, they can only show what they're given, basically what they're sent as international rights holders, and then the viewer ends up missing out if there are matches they really want to see. I just think we're at a stage now where there's so much content out there that doubles matches just need to be produced across the board on the tour, no matter what they are and no matter where you are.
Yeah, I mean, it's another sort of example and exposition of how lacking the sort of the market forces arguments are, because you're creating a marketplace. How on earth are people supposed to be interested in doubles if it's not even available for them to see and get interested in? And then the lack of interest will be used as a reason not to show it. Look, I understand the demands, the resources required to to produce doubles matches and everything. And you know, there's a lot of competing factors. But I do think the climate is changing, and it's probably needed to change. I know it's something that Jamie Murray has been campaigning for a long time, to increase the production of doubles matches, just to make it available to a bigger market, bring it to more people's attention. And, you know, recent developments seem to be shifting the goalposts a little bit. And I think that's very welcome.
Because, as you said, doubles has been having a moment, and it feels like it's back in fashion, and there are so many more opportunities for it to be showcased. And it is so much fun to watch if you actually have an opportunity to spare the time to, and are given it on your device or whatever you watch these matches on in order to see them. So that's that. Just very quickly, Catherine, matches in Montreal in the first round, the draw. We just had a look before we came on at Toronto. My goodness, it's hard to know where to look. There are so many incredible draws in the WTA event in Toronto. But I mean, you mentioned that first round of Kyrgios against Edmund. There's also Wawrinka versus Dimitrov, with the winner to face Khachanov. There's Nadal against Dimonor or Dan Evans, who's qualified in Montreal. And there's Dominic Thiem against Shapovalov or Herbert. It's a cracking week in store, isn't it? On both the men's and women's side, because in Toronto, because you've got the men's event in Montreal, the women's event in Toronto, and in the women's event, you've got Serena Williams, you've got Simona Halep, you've got Naomi Osaka, basically everybody.
Yeah, and I mean, look at some of the first rounders in Toronto. Wozniacki, Putintseva, Šašnjević against Mertens. You've got Keys against Vekic, Pavlyuchenkova, Sabalenka, Ostapenko, Garcia, Bouchard, Andreescu. I mean, that is, the Canadians are salivating in Montreal about that. And in fact, I was chatting to a Canadian journalist earlier on today who was saying that a couple of Canadian journalists this week will be commuting between Toronto and Montreal to cover both events, because they just can't afford to miss anything. You know, with Félix Auger-Aliassime being the big deal he is here in Montreal, this is his first time ever playing his home event. Of course, he played the Rogers Cup once before last year as a wild card, but that was in Toronto. And he's from Montreal, so this is a huge deal for him. Denis Shapovalov and Milos Raonic are a big deal as well, of course, but Felix is the deal in Montreal. And then to have Andreescu against Bouchard first round in Toronto, these are, you know, none of that can be missed for the prominent Canadian journalists. Kerber, Kazakhina, Sharapova, Kontaveit, Suarez, Navarro against Venus Williams, Sakkari against Risk. It's just Konta Yastremska, awesome. Azarenka, Georgie. It is all brilliant. Kenin, Sue Shea. It's so good. Oh, I'm not even sure she's got into the draw.
Oh, dear. Poor Matt.
I don't think she's in it. Was she in qualifying? Dear.
Don't see her.
No, she's not. She's not there.
Next time, maybe. Victoria.
To be honest, that's not a draw that I think she'd fare well in. It's just ridiculously good. So exciting.
Yeah, it sure is. Okay, well, I think that just about does it, Catherine. I think you better go and have your Arctic char, whatever that is, and let us all know about it next week. Can't wait. And we will be back with another show once Montreal and Toronto have finished. Catherine will be there throughout for Prime Video, and we'll catch up straight after the finals, etc. The week after, we've already hatched a plan, hopefully, to meet up with Matt Roberts, because we know you want to hear from him. And then we'll be daily throughout the US Open, of course, here on the Tennis Podcast. And then we will be done with our Grand Slam dailies after that for the year. We've got loads more things we still want to do over the course of the next few months to hopefully give you as many good shows as we possibly can. And then we'll be kickstarting our 2020 season from December the 1st. If you'd like a reminder about that and you want to pitch in order to help us continue this this show that we produce every year, you can do so. We'll give you a reminder on December the 1st if you sign up for it. Again, go to your show notes and you can stick your name down if you want to have your email address on there, and we'll just send you a note and say, right, we're crowdfunding our 2020 season, so stick your name down there. And we are produced in association with The Telegraph. We're executive produced by tennisballs.com. We have our mascot, who is Rio with a Y, and we will be back next week. Catherine, have a great week in Montreal, and we'll see you all next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.